The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com, attacks on DEI programs are making students rethink their college choices. This article was written by the Student Basic Needs Coalition on April 16th, and there is a note. This op-ed explains the impact of attacks on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and how students are fighting back. In a political climate where diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI initiatives are facing unprecedented rollbacks, students across the country are refusing to stay silent. With lawmakers taking aim at DEI programs, financial aid for marginalized students, and even access to in-state tuition, the stakes for student advocacy have never been higher. One of the biggest scares or concerns I have right now is how they're defining everything as DEI. Taylor Allgood, co-host of the Student Impact Report podcast, said in a recent episode, "That's incredibly scary because what is that going to mean if professors aren't able to mention alternative perspectives in their teaching, or if they even mention a different type of theory that doesn't align with the normative perspective?" These fears are far from hypothetical. A February 14th memo from the Trump administration ordered schools to dismantle their DEI programs within 14 days or risk losing federal funding. More than 50 colleges and universities are being investigated as part of federal efforts to end DEI initiatives nationwide. As of early February, Republican lawmakers in 20 states had introduced about 50 bills to restrict DEI programs in education and other sectors, according to an Associated Press analysis. This isn't just a political talking point. At the Student Basic Needs Coalition, SBNC, an organization that addresses food, housing, and health insecurity among college students, we know our peers are already feeling the consequences. "Diversity, equity, and inclusion impacts everyone," Jalea Taylor, student body president at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, UNC Chapel Hill, said on that same episode of the Student Impact Report podcast, which is run by SBNC. Even before some of these executive orders from the Trump administration, Jalea explained, North Carolina was one of the states that was already on this track. She pointed out that UNC Chapel Hill was one of the institutions named in the Supreme Court decision that led to the end of affirmative action in college admissions. Following the UNC Board of Governors' May decision to repeal its DEI policy, UNC Chapel Hill closed its DEI office last fall. Jalea said UNC Chapel Hill's DEI office didn't just address issues related to race and ethnicity on campus, but also supported interfaith practices. "These policy changes are affecting everyone," she added. After that decision, despite the efforts of the admissions office to ensure diversity, she said, "We did see a decrease in the amount of Black students that were accepted and enrolled at UNC, a chilling effect on campus. The growing hostility toward DEI is making some students reconsider where they want to go to school." Ohio's Senate Bill 1, which has passed the state Senate and is under consideration in the House, would prohibit public institutions of higher education from requiring DEI statements in hiring and admissions, eliminate certain diversity training, and restrict how professors discuss topics related to race, gender, and systemic inequality. It would also ban faculty strikes and put diversity scholarships at risk. Many students worry about the potential consequences of such sweeping changes. For students of color, LGBTQ+ students, and others who have relied on DEI programs for institutional support, the rollbacks feel deeply personal. "I benefited from these programs going to school," Taylor shared on the podcast episode. "I chose to go to the University of Cincinnati as opposed to an out-of-state school because I was able to receive the Darwin T. Turner Scholarship, which serves historically marginalized communities. If I didn't receive that scholarship, I would not have gone to school in Ohio." These policies will likely have unintentional financial consequences for state colleges and universities, along with local communities, as some students choose to attend other institutions or forego college altogether. Beyond race, the broader impact of DEI. One of the biggest misconceptions about DEI is that it only benefits certain racial groups. In reality, DEI policies impact everything from food pantries on college campuses to accessibility for students with disabilities. Jalea emphasized the importance of each part of DEI for college students. For instance, she said, "Inclusion is how we make sure that everyone feels they have a voice and that they're included." About diversity, she said, "When you have a diverse group of students from different backgrounds and experiences, you're likely to have better conversations and interpret history, media, politics, and science differently, and kind of come to better solutions." The push to dismantle DEI programs, some argue, is a direct attack on students' ability to advocate for themselves. The implication that marginalized groups just existing on campus is radical or wasteful is, in itself, really reductive, podcast co-host Maya Denea Taylor said. It creates a mindset that marginalized groups can't speak for themselves or occupy spaces meant for joy, education, or leadership, she continued. Students are fighting back. Despite the attacks, students aren't backing down. At UNC, Jalea has been at the forefront of efforts to preserve DEI on campus, working alongside other student advocates, college administrators, and state lawmakers to push against rollbacks. "So many different student organizations have gone to our state legislature offices to advocate," she said. "I have worked with administrators in the chancellor's office, as well as other elected officials, to advocate for DEI, or at least some aspects of it." Alongside her advocacy for DEI, she's leading the charge on UNC's proposed meal swipe donation program, which would allow students to donate extra meal swipes from their meal plan to peers, and working with administrators and fellow students to make it a reality. Peer universities like North Carolina State and the University of North Carolina at Charlotte have already developed similar programs, Jalea told local news outlet Chapelboro.com, pointing out that 96% of surveyed Carolina students said they supported the proposal. "We found that even students who were not facing food insecurity on campus were willing to support this plan," she said on the Student Impact Report podcast. "That just shows even people who might not necessarily be impacted by DEI or certain other policies are impacted because they want to see other students around them succeed." Once implemented, the program could become a model for how student-led solutions can make campus a place where everyone's basic needs are met. Student leadership and hope for the future. While many of the ongoing DEI policy shifts feel discouraging, student leaders like Jalea are proving that advocacy makes a difference. She credits previous student leaders for paving the way and inspiring her to take action. All three of the student body presidents that came before me were also Black, Jalea said. Hearing about their experiences and the way that they advocated in a room full of people who did not look like them was definitely something that was really empowering for me. Jalea also takes inspiration from prior generations of UNC Chapel Hill Black student leaders. She pointed to Raina Walters Morgan, a former UNC Chapel Hill student body president who brought a voting site to campus. She's now at the Democratic National Committee as the Vice Chair for Civil Engagement and Voter Participation, working on voter engagement and ensuring people have all the resources and access to voting. As her time as student body president comes to an end, Jalea is optimistic about the next generation of student advocates. Diversity, equity, inclusion came to UNC in 2019, and it was here for 5 years. And just as fast as it left us, it can come back, she said. It's up to students to make sure that happens. If history has shown anything, it's that students will continue to lead the fight for justice, even when institutions fail them. Policies may change, but the fight for equity in education is not going anywhere, Taylor said. Students have always been at the forefront of change, and as we've seen today, the legacy does live on. Whether it's pushing back against harmful policies, advocating for inclusive campuses, or stepping into leadership roles, we want to remind you that your voice as a student and as a leader does matter. For students looking to take action, Taylor has one piece of advice. Stay informed, get involved, and find ways to support the leaders and movements working to protect and expand education for all students. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Nicola Coughlin says she wouldn't touch Harry Potter reboot after J.K. Rowling's reaction to UK anti-trans ruling. This article was written by Karen Nesvig on April 18th. Nicola Coughlin will not be going to Hogwarts anytime soon. The Bridgerton star made no secret of her feelings toward series creator J.K. Rowling in a new Instagram post, sharing that she wouldn't touch the new Harry Potter reboot series with a 10-foot pole. Coughlin's post was a reaction to Rowling's longtime transphobia, most notably a recent post where Rowling is seen celebrating the UK's Supreme Court ruling that trans women are not considered women under the law and its Equality Act. In the photo, Rowling smokes a cigar on board a yacht. "I love it when a plan comes together," the author wrote on X, hashtagging hashtag Supreme Court and hashtag Women's Rights. Coughlin shared a news post from The Cut about Rowling, saying, "Keep your new Harry Potter, lads. Wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole." In the IG story before that one, Coughlin shared a post from Abortion Support Network that says Rowling reportedly donated £70,000 to an anti-trans crowdfunding campaign, money that could have been spent on abortion coverage to help people in need. Coughlin is referring to the forthcoming HBO original adaptation of Harry Potter, which has been in development for several years and is set to debut in 2026. Rowling serves as an executive producer on the series. In 2023, Casey Bloys, HBO CEO, said of her involvement, "We are in the Harry Potter business. The TV show is new and exciting, but we've been in the Harry Potter business for 20 years. This isn't a new decision. We're comfortable being in the Harry Potter business. JK is a very online conversation. It's very nuanced and complicated and not something we're going to get into. Our priority is what's on screen. The Harry Potter story is incredibly affirmative and positive about love and acceptance, and that's our priority, what's on the screen. Backlash followed, and in 2024, Blois said Rowling has been fairly involved in the process of selecting the writer and director, and thought she'll have opinions on casting. Since then, a handful of actors have been cast in pivotal roles, including John Lithgow as Albus Dumbledore, Papa Essiadu as Severus Snape, Janet McTeer as Minerva McGonagall, and Nick Frost as Rubius Hagrid. A casting call for Harry, Ron, and Hermione is currently underway. Rowling's transphobic rhetoric has been a dark mark on the Harry Potter franchise for years. Some of the original film stars have spoken out against her remarks and in support of trans people in recent years, including star Daniel Radcliffe. "Transgender women are women," Radcliffe wrote in a 2020 open letter. "Any statement to the contrary erases the identity and dignity of transgender people and goes against all advice given by professional healthcare associations who have far more expertise on this subject matter than either Joe or I. It's clear that we need to do more to support transgender and non-binary people, not invalidate their identities, and not cause further harm." Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Heartstopper's Joe Locke says his dream role is a really macho straight man. This article was written by Sarah Delgado on March 20th. Heartstopper star Joe Locke is manifesting his next dream role, and it might not be what you are expecting unless you have been paying attention to the actor's comments for a while. Speaking to Dylan Mulvaney in her brand new Lemonada Media podcast called The Dylan Hour, Locke opened up about his career and wishes. Towards the end of the conversation, he was asked what his hopes were as he matures into roles, and he did not hesitate to give out an answer. "I want to play a really macho straight man in an action film," Locke said. "My dream would be to get paid an S-ton of money to get really ripped." "Well, we'd love to see it, especially since his Heartstopper co-star, Kit Connor, also got ripped for a movie." This isn't the first time Locke has expressed his desire to branch out and be given new roles. In the August-September 2024 issue of Rolling Stone UK, the star opened up about his two dream roles, which fall on opposite sides of the spectrum. The first one is Disney's first openly gay prince, and the second is a macho action role. "I'd love to be in an action film, do something really macho, but in my way, not necessarily the most macho way," he said at the time. "I've not done any films yet, so I'd love to do a film." Locke later revealed to Variety that most of the casting he gets are sent for gay characters, so there are days that he never wants to play a gay character again. In that interview, Locke even shared he was cast in a straight role for a movie he couldn't ultimately do due to scheduling conflicts. He shared that he thought it was an opportunity to show he's more than a one-trick pony who was just the guy from Heartstopper, and added that that feeling in itself is maybe a problem of the industry or a problem of me and my internalized homophobia. For reference, Locke told Teen Vogue that he has been openly gay since the age of 12. Speaking to GQ around the same time as the previous interviews, Locke said he finds himself wanting to go to the other extreme whenever an opportunity to play a gay character comes across his desk. "Every time I get sent a gay role, I'm like, I want to play, like, a straight Republican, he quipped. I think I'm really in my head at the moment over being typecast as just playing a camp gay role. But it's a me thing. It's a thing I need to get over myself. Speaking to The Guardian a month later, he further talked about his fears of being typecast. I get a lot of auditions for more gay teenage characters, very similar parts, and while they're great, I've played two gay characters now, Locke said, referring to Heartstopper's Charlie and Agatha All Along's teen/Wiccan. Not that I would not want to play another gay character, but I want to be a versatile actor, not get stamped, he clarified. In that interview, Locke also manifested a villainous role instead of an action role. I want to play a villain. I want to play a part where you get to explore elements of humanity that you would never get to do in real life. Someone completely different to me. But who knows? Maybe I am authentically evil, he said. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Michelle Trachtenberg's cause of death was reportedly from diabetes complications. This article was written by P. Claire Dodson on April 17th. Michelle Trachtenberg, best known for her roles in Gossip Girl, Harriet the Spy, and Ice Princess, died at age 39 from complications related to diabetes, reported TMZ. The news comes nearly 2 months after her death on February 26th, which shocked fans and inspired a wave of tributes to the late actress from her colleagues, including Taylor Momsen, Blake Lively, and Kim Cattrall. At the time of her death, the New York City Office of the Chief Medical Examiner had said that her cause of death would remain undetermined after her family objected to an autopsy for religious reasons. Trachtenberg was reportedly Jewish, the LA Times reported. Previously, police told ABC News that Trachtenberg was found dead in her Columbus Circle apartment in New York City by her mother on Wednesday morning, February 26. At the time, sources told the New York Post that her death was not being investigated as suspicious. A statement provided by Trachtenberg's publicist reads, "It is with great sadness to confirm that Michelle Trachtenberg has passed away. The family requests privacy for their loss. There are no further details at this time." Michelle Trachtenberg was among the iconic teenage actors of her generation. A child star, she began working in commercials at age 3, then nabbed her first roles in Law and Order and the 90s Nickelodeon sitcom The Adventures of Pete and Pete. In 1996, she had her breakout role in Harriet the Spy, playing the titular teenage writer and detective. From 2000 to 2003, she starred in Buffy the Vampire Slayer as Dawn Summers. Trachtenberg went on to act in a slew of TV and movie roles, most recently in the cartoon series Human Kind of. But she'll perhaps be remembered most for her portrayal of the chaos agent Georgina Sparks in Gossip Girl, who appeared often to shake things up among the main cast and wreak havoc wherever she went. A particularly great one-liner, "You can tell Jesus that the bee is back." Trachtenberg reprised the role briefly in the 2020s Gossip Girl reboot. And there is a note. This story will be updated as more details become available. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Tyla channels Britney Spears with Coachella Weekend 2 outfit. This article was written by Ashley Carter on April 19th. Tyla took a page out of Britney Spears' style book over the weekend by wearing a similar version of the pop star's iconic look. Y2K fashion and culture have been infiltrating the masses over the last few years, with Gen Z reclaiming the low-rise jeans, big buckle belts, ballerina flats, and more. With that came Tyla's Coachella Weekend 2 performance on Friday, April 18th. The water singer stepped out onto the outdoor stage on the vast festival grounds in Indio, California, dressed in an outfit that's reminiscent of a certain pop star's VMA's performance. Tyla danced and sang on stage, wearing a green and purple bra top, along with ultra-low-rise jean shorts that were bedazzled and tasseled. She paired the outfit with an intricate necklace-slash-body chain, along with two different pairs of shoes. First, it was zebra print booties. Then, it was knee-high brown boots. If Tyla's outfit immediately seemed familiar, that's because it looks similar to one that Britney Spears famously wore more than 20 years ago. The Toxic singer rocked the 2001 MTV VMAs and shocked audiences by coming onto stage with a massive snake around her shoulders. The performance has become solidified in pop music history and upped the stakes of the VMAs every year since. But aside from the yellow creature draped around Spears' neck, it was her outfit that has since inspired recreations. Spears sang, "I'm a Slave for You," while wearing a green bra top with embellished purple details, ultra-short bedazzled shorts, and a diamond belly ring. Tyla's outfit had similar elements of Spears' famous look, right down to the flat stomach and belly button piercing. Still, Tyla kept the look her own by wearing her long, dark hair in a sort of wavy, undone look, while also adorning her eyes with dramatic magenta shadow. It's unclear if Tyla intended to recreate Britney Spears' outfit, but the similarities are uncanny while remaining unique to both musicians. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.